So we'll start with a meditation, just a shorter one, maybe 15, 20 minutes or so, just so we can settle in together, and then we'll take the rest of the time for questions. Finding a posture that feels as relaxed as it can be, and yet alert. Sometimes we might think of relaxation and alertness as being opposites, but they don't have to be. The body can be fully relaxed, the mind can be relaxed, and very alert. So allowing a relaxation of body, perhaps scanning through the body and noticing areas of tension and seeing if they can soften or relax. I'll leave some silence for you to explore that relaxation of body for a few moments. And we can also explore relaxing inside the body, the core, the interior of the body. Maybe the inside of the throat can relax. Maybe the heart can relax. Maybe the stomach and the intestines can relax. Having consciously explored the body and explored the possibility of relaxing the body, sometimes there's some relaxation that's available that we don't have conscious access to, but that our system can find its way to. Sometimes we can open to that by dropping in a request. May the body relax. Just dropping that. Into your meditation and be willing to just see how the mind and body respond to that invitation. May the body relax. May the mind relax. Being willing to allow some of the wisdom of our system to support our practice. May the mind relax. And from whatever relaxation that's available, checking in, is there awareness? Are you aware? And what is obvious? Exploring, receiving experience rather than looking for it. Perhaps exploring the perspective of being with experience, receiving and being with what's already here. You may notice that many experiences cycle through. That's okay. Sometimes the attention is more interested in the experiences, and sometimes it's more kind of settled back into the awareness. Both are fine, there are just different ways that the mind attends to what's happening. So relax. Recognizing awareness. Are you aware? And aware of what is obvious, what is already available, being received by awareness. The mind will wander, will forget this orientation towards being aware, And at some point, there will be the recognition, the returning of mindfulness. Recognizing that moment when awareness returns, aware again. Aware again. It doesn't matter that the mind was wandering a moment ago. You're noticing this very effortless moment of awareness returning right now, in that moment. And what's obvious in that moment? How are you in that moment? The mind, having been wandering, has created conditions in the mind and has shaped experience. And so when the mindfulness returns, it's kind of like being willing to honor the new experience that's now here. Opening to that. And if there is tension that has come in as the mind was wandering, it can be useful to relax again. Just take some time to soften the body, relax the body, relax the mind. Now, as there is more relaxation, connecting again to aware of what? What is obvious? From time to time, you could check in how you are in relationship to experience. Do you want something to happen? Stop happening? Is there some confusion or belief of you about what's happening? Maybe the mind is simply okay with what is happening. No problem. In checking that relationship, you may or may not see a particular relationship. If not, just continue aware each moment. What's here? If you do notice some kind of relationship or attitude, then that's just one of the things that is arising, available to be known. The human being is experiencing that relationship, knowing that. Are you aware? What is obvious? Remembering a light touch. Just enough effort to be with this experience right now. And then do it again. And again. And again. So hello again. So there are quite a number of questions that were submitted through the form. So I'll respond to some of those to start with. But I will open the chat right now so that you can chat to me. Send the chats to me. And I'll start with some of the ones that were submitted in advance. So first, some kind of logistical questions. There were some questions about the structure of the retreat. How's the morning different from the afternoon? So basically, the morning will be instruction, guided meditation, a little bit of a reflection probably. So the first part of the morning will be more what the new piece is that I'm offering for the day, and a little bit of reflection around that. And then we'll open it up to questions following that. The afternoon, being a little shorter, will be mostly probably just a short guided meditation followed by questions that won't particularly introduce any new things in the guided meditation, although new things could come up in the Q&A. So that's the kind of the layout of the two parts of the day. And then another question around participating with other things in the retreat, during the retreat. Somebody mentioned that they have some Zoom meetings online and some small group meetings to discuss Dharma topics and other things. This is a daily life retreat. So the two pieces that, the two pieces of the day that are kind of structured are these two, the morning from 7:30 to 9 in the afternoon, or Pacific time, and the afternoon session from 3:30 to 4:30 Pacific time. Other than that, you are welcome to engage in your day. I mean, it's like this retreat is designed to support you in learning how to bring mindfulness into your usual everyday activities. And so by all means, attend your other groups, attend your practice groups, your other Dharma meetings, go to work, talk to your families, go to the grocery store, whatever you need to do. So this is not intended to be a secluded kind of retreat. So engage and see if you can bring awareness with you. This is the practice, bringing awareness into all of our activities. And you'll find it's challenging, but over the course of the week, I think you might find that there's more mindfulness that begins to show up. And that's what I hope for you to begin to learn, the way in which mindfulness can begin to infuse whatever we're doing. And I did speak about that a little bit this morning, that noticing when mindfulness returns in our daily life. And I just pointed to that again in the guided meditation. You know, the moment that we remember that we've been lost, like emphasize the waking up part of that moment when mindfulness is returning, because it really gives you a sense of how mindfulness can infuse any experience. Because that mindfulness can return in the midst of a very focused, kind of concentrated experience where we're really involved in planning or doing something. It can also arise in a kind of a physical activity or just anything that we're doing. So it begins to give you a sense of the possibility of how mindfulness can be aware of any experience. I would say there's no experience that we can have except possibly non-mindfulness of which we cannot be mindful of. We can be mindful of anything. So by all means, carry on in your day and explore this possibility. So another question around reading, if there are any reading materials to support the retreat. I almost never read during retreat, but wondered if it might be useful to get more familiar with this way of practicing. And, in the retreats that I've practiced with Sayadaw Utejaniya, he often will give us his book, and make it available to us to read during the retreat. And I'd say this kind of retreat is an ideal one to incorporate that. And so I will post in the on the Google page, I'll post a couple of links to PDF files of some of Sayadaw's books. And the two that I'd most recommend for those of you who are newer to the practice are called Dhamma Everywhere and Don't Look Down on the Defilements, They Will Laugh at You. So those two books, there's PDF available easily on the web, and I'll put links to those on the page. I'm also, I have 5 years ago, students from one of the retreats I taught in this style offered to transcribe the instructions and some of the talks that I did on that retreat. And it's in process of putting together those into book form. And I have, I've been working on that, and I have a PDF of that. But as I was looking at it, I realized there's a lot of errors in it. And so what I did today was the first section of it, the first day, basically, I went through and I did some edits. And so I'm going to put that up as well. And each day I'll do a little bit more of it, and I'll put the next piece of it up. So it'll be kind of a growing document during the week. So that will also be available. That will be perhaps a little more familiar, because it's my own language, my own words. So it's very much the way I teach. Oh, and one more piece, another announcement, couple more announcements, actually. So I worked it out with Gil. We figured out what the issue was, and there is no need for a new link on Monday morning. We're fine. So those links are good. And I also posted on the Google page how to get to the recordings. There was, I think, a question about, yes, will we be able to review the recordings? Yes, we are able to review the recordings, and that information about how to do that is found on that Google Doc that that Yosh sent at the beginning of the retreat, where it has the links. Right at the top of that page, I created a little announcement section and put in there how to get to that. So if you haven't figured that out by tomorrow morning, put a question into the box tomorrow, and I'll walk you through it. But I think I did a pretty clear job of explaining how to do that in that document. So a couple of questions. And I think what I'll do right now is there was a question, where is the Google page for this retreat? So that is the page that you should have received from Yosh in an email. If you cannot find that email, then send Yosh another email. I think you should have her email address Well, that's found on the IMC website, because that was how you got to register for the retreat in the first place. So if you can't find the Google page in your email, then go ahead and email Yosh, and she'll send you another copy of the link for this. So a question submitted from the in advance questions. I missed the 3 points this morning. What are the 3 key points for this practice? And the person remembered what is happening and how is the mind in relationship to experience. And so the 3 key points are, or the 3 key tools that we use are checking awareness. Am I aware? Just that. Recognizing awareness. And then, what is obvious? So what's happening in the present moment? So there's the awareness and the experience. There's the part of the mind that knows what's happening, and there's what's happening. So there, that we can know kind of both sides of that. We can kind of be aware that we're aware, and we can be aware of what we are aware of. So those 2 pieces are the first 2 pieces of this. Is there awareness? Am I aware? And what is obvious? And then the third is the attitude or the relationship to experience. So a few more points about each of those, or about some of this. Oh, and another piece that kind of overarches all of those we could add as a fourth point is relax. Letting relaxation be a support for all of those three. Am I aware? What's obvious? And what's the attitude? So Sayadaw Utejaniya teaches the kind of the tool of this practice to explore each of those three by asking questions in the mind, actually using the questions. Am I aware? What's obvious? Or you could shorten it to simply aware, you know, just aware with the question mark, aware. Is there awareness? Of what? What's obvious? What's here? So he encourages the use of questions, not as a kind of a looking for anything, but more, so this is a skill that we can learn. And it's not helpful for everyone. So play with it and see if it supports you. You know, you can just know that you're aware and know what's obvious. That's kind of like, if those of you who have done the noting practice, the difference between noticing and noting, you know, you can simply know what's happening, or you can kind of use language in the mind to help you connect with what's happening. So the questions are kind of like just dropping in an orientation into the mind. Is there awareness? And what is obvious? Not trying to figure out the answer to the question, but it's more like an invitation to our system to be curious about that question. So the question, am I aware? If you think to ask that question, if you can remember to ask that question, you're even thinking along those lines at all, you get to answer yes to that question. You know, you are aware. If you are, you know, if you're consciously thinking that question, you are aware. And so the question might arise then, well, why bother? Why bother asking the question? And what I've discovered in my own practice, the answer to that, why we would bother asking it, is because without a kind of, you know, just kind of assuming we're aware or knowing that we're aware in that way, we don't necessarily kind of attune to what it means to be aware. So the question orients our interest towards what is it like to be aware? What is the experience of awareness? So it adds a little bit of curiosity. Yes, I know I'm aware, but how do I know I'm aware? Not, we don't have to like dive in and try to figure that out. But the question kind of opens the mind to land a little more, with a little more curiosity about the experience of being aware. What is the experience of awareness? So that would be the point of asking that question. And then the second question, of what, just kind of, again, orients the mind to that receptive mode rather than trying to find something. It's more like, okay, show me. You show me what's obvious. And then the third question, around the attitude, what's the relationship to experience? What's the attitude? And that kind of points us to how we are with what's happening. Now, there can be relationships to the kind of obvious experiences that we're having. You know, there's a sound happening in the room or next door, and we have a relationship to that. Or there's a body sensation and we have a relationship to that. Or there's an emotion and we have a relationship to that. So the relationship might be around what we are experiencing, but it also can be, the relationship can be related to what we're doing, which is meditating. The relationship might be connected to agendas we have for our meditation. Ideas about what it should be, how it should be. And so you may notice that some of the relationships aren't necessarily about the object itself, but are about what we think should be happening in the meditation. So the experience itself might be pleasant or might be, you know, just a kind of ordinary thing, but we have the idea, I'm not supposed to be noticing ordinary things in meditation. It's supposed to get much more quiet and settled, and I'm supposed to see more subtle things. Why am I not seeing more subtle things? And so we end up with the relationship of frustration to the experience, not because of the experience itself, but because we have an agenda about the meditation. So the relationship we might notice could have some different flavors to it, depending on where the relationship is coming from. In checking the relationship to experience, you can drop in a question for that too. What's the attitude? How am I with experience? What's the relationship to the experience? Sometimes another question that I find useful, not so much pointed to the relationship necessarily, but can get at it, is what else is happening right now? Because often the attitude is something that's kind of hidden behind the scenes. It's something we're not consciously aware of. It's more of how we're observing experience, and it's not in the field of what we're knowing. And so the question, what else is happening, sometimes can broaden us to become aware of something that might be behind the scenes. The attitude is kind of like a filter on our experience. It's like a lens that we might be looking through, a blue lens or a green lens. And if we're not aware of looking through that lens, things we're seeing are colored by that lens. And we may be unwittingly, you know, kind of orienting towards things through that perspective without being clear that we have that lens that we're looking through. So when we become aware, oh, they've got this lens on, I've got this like green lens on, or this lens of confusion, or this lens of aversion, or this lens of desire. So seeing the lens is kind of like taking the colored filter off and looking at it instead of through it. So then we just are able to know, oh, that flavor of lens is happening. So like the others, we check in, we can check in and ask that question. We may not see particularly anything at that moment, and that's fine. I wouldn't go digging. If something's obvious, it will show up with the question. Just continuing with, am I aware? What's obvious? Checking the attitude is not something to do too vigorously. We might, get kind of on top of it. It's like, well, what's my attitude? And oh, what's my attitude about that? And what's my attitude about that? And it just kind of gets into this stepping back. And it gets a little bit like a swirl in the mind, almost like an infinite regress or something. And so I usually suggest that you check the attitude from time to time, not every single minute, maybe, you know, every 5 minutes or so you could check the attitude, just occasionally check the attitude. And then there's some useful times to check the attitude. One particularly useful time is if it feels like there's a struggle in your meditation, it feels like it's hard to be with something, if there's a kind of a resistance, that's a good time to check the attitude, become conscious of what it is that struggle is about. Another good time to check the attitude is when you return from having been lost in thought. after the mind returns, you've checked in, you become aware, you notice what you have become aware of, sometimes it can be useful there to notice, and what's the relationship? Because as the mind wanders, as it goes off into thought, the mind, when it goes into thought, thought is a very powerful constructing force in the mind. When we start thinking about something, particularly when we're not aware of it, it is conditioning our minds. It's shaping our experience. And so if we've been lost in thought around, an argument we were having with a partner, or some conversation or something that we need to do, a kind of an anxiety about something we need to do. If when we come back, we don't take in that attitude is in the mind, then it can kind of enter into how we are paying attention. So really useful when you come back from wandering after you've checked in, how are you now? What's here now? And what's my relationship to what's here? Sometimes the attitude upon wandering, the wandering mind, is about the mind having wandered. You know, we're all familiar with the judging quality of when our mindfulness returns. It's like, oh, the mind was wandering. It shouldn't have been doing that. That's an attitude. That's a relationship to the wandering mind. And I hope that, exploring a little bit of kind of the curiosity about what's it like for mindfulness to return. For me, that was a really powerful tool for cutting that judgment. And I've emphasized that moment, it's a moment of effortless mindfulness. It's a great moment to get familiar with what it's like to be mindful of whatever it is the mind is waking up into. We can kind of discover that we can be mindful of things we never thought we could be mindful of, like spacing out. It's like we can wake up into spacing out and notice, wow, that's what it's like to be spacing out. So it's a gift for us to notice that moment of mindfulness returning. If we're judging ourselves immediately for not having been aware of the moments before, we kind of miss seeing that arising. So those two, noticing when there's a struggle, noticing when the mindfulness returns. These are good times to check the attitude. A third good time to check the attitude is if it feels like it's going really well. It's like, yeah, this is, it's rolling along. Sometimes it might be that rolling along or the feeling of doing well, there's a little bit of greed in there. There might be a little bit of greed in there, a little bit, oh, I'm doing it right. I've figured it out. That kind of attitude could be in the mind. But it's also possibly, it is when things feel like they're going well, when there's not a problem, it's a great time to check into what it feels like in the mind when it's not struggling with what's happening. So the absence of struggle is present in that case at times. That's stepping into that place where, oh, this is what it's like to be aware when the mind is at ease, when the mind is calm. We often don't actually connect with that part of the experience. And this is wholesome qualities in the mind. And so this supports the mindfulness to begin to recognize wholesome qualities in the practice. I'm going to take a question from the chat box now and then go back to another question, a couple questions from the submitted ones. So probably won't get through all these questions today. Can we do one pointed meditation one day and receptive meditation another day or alternate in the same sitting? So I would suggest right now, if you're learning this technique right now, if you're learning how to do this, I'd suggest just this week, play with this technique. But it is it is possible to weave the open awareness, the receptive awareness technique with other practices. So I have done that myself with concentration practice, and I found it particularly helpful for creating the conditions for a relaxed kind of mind to support the conditions for relaxation before going to one-pointed mindfulness, one-pointed practice. So it is definitely something you can play with. And I would look at, you know, what's skillful, what's useful for you. And I may talk about this in particular more later in the retreat, this kind of back and forth. This is often something I get to when there's a little bit more skill with the open awareness practice. But yes, you can interweave them. I have done it on a day-to-day basis, sometimes a couple of days of concentration, a couple of days of open awareness, on a sitting-to-sitting basis, or even within the sitting. So it is something that is it can be very useful. And then a couple of questions around noting. So that I'll read this question. Is the noticing that I've learned in the Mahasi approach, and so that for those of you who are unfamiliar with the noting practice, that's a practice of when you notice something, it's like you're exploring experience through just being aware of what's happening. Ultimately, it moves to that. The Mahasi practice begins with a focused attention with the breathing, but then as something else arises and pulls the attention, you note that. So you might be noticing the breath, noticing the in-breath, the out-breath, and noting in and out while you're noticing that. And then a sound arises, and you might then note hearing. Hearing is happening. So is the noticing I've learned through the Mahasi approach, can it have a similar quality to the lightly touching in with the awareness that I recommend and Sayadaw recommends? I find that very lightly noticing has a similar quality for me, like a brief brushing with the mind of what is passing through in this brief unfolding moment. I know that noting can have a grasping, heavy-minded quality, but that's not my experience lately. Perhaps you can comment. I would say that this description of the light quality, the light touch of noting, this is what it's like when it's done skillfully. So it sounds like there's been some cultivation of skill in this. The mind that just knows or recognizes experience and kind of names it or can lightly contact it. You know, I sometimes find in my practice that the mind does name things. And that this actually gets to the next question. My mind automatically labels whatever comes into awareness, either the sense, thinking, hearing, seeing, or the object itself, car, airplane, raindrops. The objects come and go fairly quickly, so my mind feels unsettled rather than concentrated. I recognize aversion to the busy mind, but I'm curious about the intention of practice. Are we meant to be aware of the awareness rather than the senses or the objects? So this is another kind of flavor of what may seem to be noting or labeling. And it is possible, those of you who've done a lot of the noting practice, it's possible that what you're seeing is the habit, the practice habit of noting. That's possible, that, you know, what we sometimes see when we start this more receptive kind of practice, we sit down, we, you know, orient to being present with experience, and our body and mind just does what it usually does, which is orient perhaps to the breath and maybe doing some noting. And so what you're seeing is kind of the habit there. So it can be that you're noticing, that just the kind of the recognition of the mind doing its habitual thing. If you're noticing practice habits arise in this practice, and I'm curious, maybe just a quick like show of hands, anybody noticing kind of the mind orienting back to a familiar practice in this. Yeah, I'm seeing some hands. Yep. And this certainly was the case for me. You know, I did a lot of noting practice. And then as I just opened to what's happening, I mean, part of the other thing that I did a lot was orienting to the body. And when I sat down and relaxed, that's what the mind did, is it oriented to the body. And so a couple of suggestions for what to do when you notice the mind doing its practice habit. So one, first, check and see if the mind has picked up the habit and is doing it. You know, has it jumped on the bandwagon of that? Is it aiming itself at the breath, for instance? Is it doing the noting practice? If it's doing that, if the mind has kind of picked that up and is actively engaged, then see if you can let go of that doing in favor of just noticing, okay, this is what's here. This is the experience that's here. Sometimes, though, I've seen that the practice habit, like for myself, with the orientation to the body, you know, that was what happened when I relaxed. When I was not doing anything, that's what happened. And so Sayadaw suggested, you know, he said, you need to broaden your awareness. You know, this is the habit. You need to broaden the awareness. But he didn't give me a particular suggestion. And so what I began doing was I would just start the meditation with whatever felt most natural. What was easy? I'd relax and receive experience. And the awareness gravitated towards body sensation. And then I brought in the tool of checking the attitude. So that checking the attitude takes the attention into a kind of a different part of the experience. So, whatever, if you're relaxing and the attention gravitates towards being with the breath, for example, with relaxation, not a doing of it, but just that's very natural, that's what happens. Then notice how the mind is having been doing that. So it broadens the attention a little bit to notice the relationship. What's the relationship? What happened for me when I did that? It's like I'd notice, okay, yep, I'd start with just relaxing and receiving. And there's the body sensation. And after a certain point, it's like, okay, what's the relationship? How is the mind in relationship to this body, this experience? And, you know, what I noticed is that the mind was happy. It was relaxed. It was calm. There was ease there. And I had not noticed that part of the experience. And so it began to bring the attention to not only the body, but the mind. So those are a couple of pieces around working with practice habits, which is possible what this question is referring to. But another piece that this could be referring to, what can be happening here, is that as we start to be aware in this way, just noticing what's happening, there's a process in the mind. The Buddha identified five processes of body and mind that kind of make up our experience. And this is one of those processes, the process of perception, of recognizing experience. I'll just name the other four right now. I don't know that we'll get into the details of these five during the retreat, but the five processes the Buddha talked about are processes of body, the process of recognizing feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, the perceptual process of recognizing experience, mental formation, the mind that orients and chooses and decides, the intentional quality in the mind, and then the consciousness process, the process of knowing. So these five processes. The process of perception is the process by which we recognize the world, by which we know what's around us. And so the mind is doing this constantly as we're walking through the world. And as our mind gets a little more quiet and we start tuning kind of inwardly into what we're aware of, we might begin to notice this perceptual process happening. And sometimes this perceptual process, this recognition process, seems like we're talking to ourselves. It can happen in many forms. It can happen in any flavor that we think in. And we can think in visual images. We can think in as if we're talking to ourselves in words, as if somebody else is talking to ourselves in words. We can think in terms of kind of kinesthetic experience. And so the recognition of experience can come in any one of those flavors. But I'd say for many of us, it comes in the language of the label of what it is. And so as we open to the unfolding of our experience, we might be sitting in meditation and breathing, and then suddenly there's a sound, and the mind labels that sound. It labels it car or motorcycle or bird or dog. We're walking sometimes, and I find actually playing with this, if you want to play with this, the field of hearing is one of the easiest places to notice this, that the experience of hearing is one thing, and the recognition of what is heard is another process in the mind. So there's the sound, the vibration in the eardrum of the motorcycle, the sound of rrr, and then there's the mind that goes, motorcycle. This process of perception happens all the time. And usually it's not in our conscious awareness that it's happening. So, but when we meditate, when we sit down and meditate, we can become aware of this. So one thing that I encourage people to do, if you start noticing this, you start noticing the labeling happening, is to see, can you drop it? Can you stop doing it? Because if it's perception, I mean, if it's a labeling, if it's an active labeling process, you may be able to back off from it. Unless it's a very strong habit from the Mahasi technique or the labeling technique. If it's a doing in the mind doing that, then sometimes we can back off from it. If it's perception, you're not going to be able to stop it. It's just the mind doing its job to recognize experience. So that's something to be aware of, that is a part of experience that we can start to notice. It's a very fundamental piece of our experience, and we tend to believe that what we're perceiving is reality. So there's a whole host of kind of beliefs and views that can enter into perception that then filter how we see that experience. I'll get into that. We'll get into that more in a couple days. But then the second part of the question is the objects coming and going quickly and the mind feels unsettled. That I spoke to a little bit this morning, that the seeing so many experiences coming and going. Initially, if you're unfamiliar with this, if you're used to a one-pointed kind of practice, it probably is going to feel very unsettled. That there's so much that you're noticing. It can feel like the mind is just whirling. So, in that case, sometimes stepping back to knowing the awareness can be helpful. Just, yes, I know that I'm aware and there's a lot here. And it's more like what is really obvious there is the chaotic nature of all of the experience. And so, yeah, there's awareness and knowing that there's a lot of stuff happening. Playing with that to see if that allows the mind to feel a little more settled. I also mentioned in the guided meditation that the attention can be on the side of the awareness. Like we can know the awareness itself, or we can know that the attention is in the experience. We don't have to prefer one or the other. At certain times, the mind will be more interested in the objects of experience, and sometimes it'll be more interested in the awareness itself. So the practice does allow us to become more and more attuned to the awareness, but we don't have to try to find that place. If the mind is noticing a chaotic arising and passing of experience, a lot of stuff going on, that is what can be known. And then noticing the relationship of not liking there, perhaps, the unsettled quality, as this person mentioned. The mind feels unsettled. I don't like this. I like it to be still. So that relationship is based on the agenda, probably, of what we think the meditation should feel like. So if we have to think of the meditation or being mindful as always having that still quality, then it's going to be really hard to bring our mindfulness right into our daily lives. Because in our daily lives, there's a lot of stuff coming at us. And so this is a skill, this learning how to be with the variety of things coming at us. In the sitting meditation, we can learn this. Then we can apply that to being mindful in the midst of our lives. So that's our time. I want to be sure to honor our time together. So